Spoilers are terrifying nomadges, and when nomadges are spoiled, they attack.
Spoilers maximum.
This is your Makuza president, Serafina Pickery. All information regarding the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them case is now declassified. Obliviators are standing by. Have a magical day.
Welcome to episode 25 of Speak Beastie for December the 4th, 2016.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Sophie.
I'm Eleanor.
And I'm Claire.
So guys, you saw a movie.
Yeah, three times.
So you guys weren't on the last episode, so now you get to tell us what you thought of the movie.
So I honestly had no expectations. I was getting slightly more excited over the last few weeks, especially as more manga people started seeing it. And even though I saw it in a preview, I still felt like I was the last person to see it. Because that nerdy little bubble we all live in. But I loved it. I will happily ignore its faults, some of the clunky writing and clunky acting. But generally, like, on the third viewing I went to see with my sister and my dad on Sunday, I was grinning like an absolute loon for 90% of it. And yeah, I adored it. I adore all the four of the main characters. All of the beasts, one of my favorites, possibly my favorite, I will talk about later. Yeah, it's great.
I didn't know what to expect either, and I was not really properly excited until the day I went to see it, and I was really excited. but kind of uncontainable excitement. But what I really liked about going to see it was that even though there were expectations, there wasn't like the expectations of seeing a Harry Potter film where you come out thinking, oh, they left this out. So it was great, just like a new story. And yeah, I loved it. There were some things I wasn't so keen on, but overall, I really enjoyed it. And my favourite bits, I think, had to do with Newt and his beasts and the case. And yeah, I think my favourite creature was Pickett, because he was adorable.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of similar, I guess, to Sophie. Well, actually, no, I'm completely different to Sophie because I think it's interesting. Sorry, I just realized what I was going to say. But how I felt about it was actually like it felt exactly like a Harry Potter movie, except for the fact that I didn't know what they were leaving out, but I knew they were leaving things out kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think I loved the first half of the movie. I absolutely thought it was really, really beautiful. I quite enjoyed the setup, and then it sort of felt like it sort of unraveled a bit towards the end, and I started being like, okay, that was very convenient, and I started sort of thinking, mm-hmm. you know, it started pulling myself out of the movie while I was watching it. Like, I still quite enjoyed it, but by the end I was sort of going, okay, that was fine. If I wasn't obsessed with Harry Potter, I don't think I'd see it again. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was interesting. I saw it first time I saw it by myself just to see it. And obviously having talked about it for like a year intensely with all of you. And then like, so you kind of find yourself thinking about things or noticing things. And then I saw it with my brother and sister and we literally came out and my sister was like, she didn't know who any of the characters were. And it was just really weird seeing it with people who hadn't had any preconceptions at all. And yeah, it just made me think about how much we really have talked about it. how different an experience that makes it.
Yeah.
I think for me as well, I'm very much a character person over a story. I will ignore dodgy story points if I adore the characters, which is why J.K. Rowling just nails it for me, because every now and then story might not be perfect, but characters always are. I think that's why, yeah. But I also think the more I've talked about it, the more I've enjoyed it. So the first time I saw it, I got quite emotional in the opening scene when with the Hogwarts bit popped up. I just started crying. I was like, I didn't realize I felt this way.
I cried at the WB logo. I was like, what's going on?
I know, just like something. It's that bloody Hedwig theme.
Yeah.
But then the next day, I went to a press breakfast thing at House of Mina Lima. And was chatting to Mira, and it was just like just chit chat because I've sort of met her at a few events over the years. And then I was talking more about the movie, and after about 5 minutes, I suddenly realized I am getting really giddy about this film now. I think I liked it more than I realized. And this has been a bit downhill since then, or uphill, whichever way you want to say it. But yeah,
yeah, I like, you know, it like met my expectations and I liked it, but I was like, oh, it's not like, oh, this is. I'm, you know, freaking out about it. But then, like, I'm starting to get, like, really defensive of it, I've noticed.
Yes.
Like, someone will say something that's not even really a critique, and I'm like, well, how dare you?
Yeah, I'm just ignoring any review that's mildly critical. And I love Empire magazine and one particular journalist, Helena Kotohara, and she's a massive nerd who's been quite excited for this movie. And she gave it 3 stars. And I didn't read her review after that 3 stars. And then she discussed it on the Empire podcast and they were really negative. I was like, no, don't break me. It's like favorite journalist of mine just not being that happy with it. I was like, oh, I'm going to have to stop listening now. It makes me upset.
Oh, don't do that. I think it's good to be critical of this stuff. I mean, that's the other thing is that she invites it. She gave it, well, I don't know what it is for you guys, but for us, it's an M rating. And I'm like, okay, it's pitched at adults. Now you can't have just like a free pass. Like, well, this is meant to be for kids. Like, I'm going to critique this hard. So deal with it kind of thing. But I'm a horror.
And it will only make it better PG-13, when they come to work on the rest as well. I think for a first screenplay, while there are issues and some faults for first screenplay, it's pretty good. And I think, the criticism that they get this time around will only be taken into consideration as they develop the next few films. So that's pretty across the board thoughts from us, guys.
Yeah, well done.
Nice variety.
And now a message from our sponsor.
Stop the presses! Big Beastie is on Patreon.com. With options ranging from $1 to $5 per month, you can become a sponsor of Speak Beastie and help us to bring you more from Newt's fantastic wizarding world. But wait, there's more! Rewards include access to bloopers and extended conversations. You can also help us decide on a discussion topic for future episodes. We want to thank all of our sponsors for helping us reach our first goal. Our next goal is to get merchandise. Check out patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more and become a sponsor today.
All right, now it's time for our post. So we asked you to tell us your feelings about the movie. And what we've gotten from the Speak Beastie common room is Lane, who's also known as Buckbeak, is my spirit animal. And she was on episode 23. So she said that, "My husband has a theory about the swooping evil venom. He says he's enough of a fan to post things himself, but he was wondering why Newt is so interested in experimenting with that, and he thinks he has a reason. So his theory is that Newt is trying to forget Leta Lestrange. Newt wants to forget whatever horrible thing happened between the two of them. And on both occasions she comes up, he asks some question about who the... he asks some question about who the question is about, and he says he doesn't know her or what she likes or who she is anymore, and that's because he truly doesn't remember much of her. My husband thinks that at the end of the movie, when he gives Frank the venom, that's a sign that Tina has begun taking Leta's place in his life, and he has accepted the consequences, and he's healing finally. His other thought is that maybe Newt is experimenting with the venom to help Dumbledore forget Ariana and Grindelwald."
So first off, Lane, your husband is a massive nerd. This is such a nerdy theory. It's amazing. This is not light fan discussion.
I couldn't possibly post it on a fan discussion board, but is this incredibly in-depth?
I think it's an interesting theory. I don't know.
Because it's a good question of, like, why was he experimenting with this? But I mean, I guess just to figure out what it is, because he's, you know, learning about beasts, but why this in particular?
Yeah, and it could also be a case of he didn't know what it did, because often a lot of his, the beasts that he discovers, he's not necessarily the first to discover them, but he's the first to research them. He maybe didn't know, and then he, like, one of them, like, breathes on his face, whatever it is they do in that underground scene. And then he realized it had some of the memory loss properties. And maybe kind of by accident, he started forgetting Leto the Strange. But yeah, I think it was, you guys brought it up in the last episode about how it was incredibly convenient. It was kind of like mentioned at the very beginning. And then all of a sudden it's able to sort of fix everything at the end.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
And it went from like, I'm not experimenting with it to, oh, I know that this will work if we just dump it on everyone.
Yeah. Which, so it's nice to think that there is a bigger thought process behind it, and that he had been researching it with, like, and experimenting for a while, and he knows there's more to it. I do think the fact that he says he doesn't know her or what she's up to anymore, I think that is just, like, blustering, like, type of character that he is. Basically posh British slang.
Typical English person. Yeah. Like, don't talk about my feelings.
Yeah, what's that? although that scene where he, when Queenie keeps trying to read his mind and he just says, please stop that, is heartbreaking. He is, his face in that is very sweet.
It also shows he can't do occlumency though.
Yeah.
I just chucked that out there just for future reference.
Nice,
I don't know. Also, I thought this was kind of interesting because it sort of reminds me a little bit of, like, you know, a lot of the reason why people say, well, you know, even if you're not interested in animals and the environment, we don't know what kind of possible medical research or whatever could come out of, you know, looking at these animals kind of thing. I think that is kind of a nice parallel, you know, like how you have, like, with vampire bats, and then, you know, they use the vampire bat sort of saliva, which is a fantastic anticoagulant on, like, all sorts of things, you know, that it's, you know, sort of taking off all the way around the world. And it's like, I think it's quite nice there's that parallel between that magical muggle kind of world. But anyway.
Yeah, and I think so. A lot, Eddie Redmayne brought a lot of that to, maybe not this particular point, but he did bring a lot of that to the character. I think he said in the interviews that bit where he heals the Murtlap bite on Jacob. That was something that he'd learned from someone that he was studying. I think he went and studied with a load of people for a few months, and that was something he picked up when he was with one of them. So, yeah, I like the idea that he could also have been bringing stuff to the table, but it is that kind of, like, cross sort of learning across the different wizarding and muggle worlds. It's cool. I like the point. I like the suggestion from Lane's husband.
Good theory.
Who is definitely a big enough fan to post these things for himself.
Moving on to our next comment. We've got a comment from Rosmerta, who highlights several questions about plot points. So she says, did Mary Lou know her adopted children could be wizards? Is modesty now alone? David Heyman, or David Yates, has now confirmed that Credence gets in Newt's boat. What about modesty? Did the multi-spell blast knock the Obscurus out of Credence? I think he'd be a really powerful but totally untrained wizard. And then she also asks, so who is the real Graves? Obviously someone that Macusa trust. He's clever, talented, influential, but gets taken out by Grindelwald. Check the timing. Grindelwald was in Europe days before we see Newt arriving in New York, and was Revelio really all that was needed? Seems such a simple spell. So I think we're going to address the questions. Graves bit later, but yeah, all good questions. Where do you want to start?
Well, let's just start with Mary Lou. I think she did know that her adopted children could be wizards, because it sounded like she specifically took them from
Because she says
people. Or at least she took Credence from
Because she says about his mother, like, she was an awful woman or something.
A wicked and unnatural woman, wicked, I think, woman.
Yeah, unnatural.
I really want more backstory for her. Like, well, because, you know, so why do you hate wizards and witches so much? Why are you so sure that they exist? Like, obviously you've had some sort of experience, or are you completely unhinged? And, like, if so, you know, how did, like, what, why are witches and wizards the ones that are, you know, the scapegoat then? Like, it's, oh, there are so many questions with that. I was like, please just give me a few more scenes, man. Like, just cut that mating dance in half and give us a narrow.
Controversial opinion.
I know, right?
I have mocky research that says you're wrong on that point.
Of Harry Potter fans who are like, very, very, very great sample size you have. Like, just, I'm sorry, I'm not critical. No.
Yeah, I think this. For she's definitely not just completely bonkers, because witches and wizards do exist in her world, so something must have happened to her as a younger person to then,
well,
or maybe
if she's a second Sailor though, she would have been raised in that belief.
I forgot all that stuff we read on Pottermore. so she's been raised that way, but it does feel like it maybe have been exacerbated because she is so determined. But I think there must
and
be
taking children like that's a big step.
It would also suggest that, so going on to the is modesty alone and what about modesty, is that she was adopted from a family of 12. And I mean, whether they were all put up for adoption, we don't know. But it was implied that it was like taken from the house. So unless modesty was showing signs of magic and the family didn't want her, wasn't quite sure what was going on, and maybe that's when Mary Lou took her in as a form of trying to like stamp the wizardry out of these kids, the magic out of them. Well, not by stamping, by beating it out of them. Maybe it is specific. I don't know about, and I've completely forgot her name.
Chastity,
yeah. Doesn't talk very much. It's a shame, because that actress is pretty good. She didn't really have a great deal.
She was a little superfluous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we like don't even know for sure if modesty does have magic or came from a magical family. But it feels like that is what Mary Lou was doing, taking kids from magical families. I can't be sure.
I guess that could potentially also be implied when she contemplates that kid with the like birthmark and asking if it's a witch's mark, almost like she inspects them, and that's when she then like takes them in.
She's keeping an eye on all these children.
That was really weird, that whole kind of Oliver kind of feeding them all scene. It's a bit bizarre.
But it's weird that kid was like, is this a witch's mark? Like, what was he expecting to happen? Like, was he expecting Mary Lou to get rid of it? And like, if so, how? And like, what is she, like, what's she been telling them? I don't know. I want to know more.
Well, she's getting them to fly her about witches, so they're obviously reading. Well, maybe not reading. You don't know. But like, they should be telling them stuff and preaching stuff to them. And maybe just that, again, it's out of fear. It's how Credence ended up suppressing his magic out of fear of the unknown, of what he's been told is bad. Mary Lou sort of like suppresses that, forces them to suppress that by beating them. And maybe she also knows that Credence is most likely to be a wizard, because Tina says that line about she beats all those children she adopts, but she seems to hate him the most. So I don't know whether that maybe implies that she knows more, or she senses more than she lets on.
Yeah.
So now the question of, could the Obscurus have been knocked out of Credence?
I don't think so. I think the Obscurus sounds like it's a like soul magic type thing. You know,
the weird thing is the line in the screenplay is, let me just open the screenplay so I say it exactly. When you see the little wisp of the Obscurus float away. As Newt follows Madame Pickery's gaze, he sees a tendril of black matter, a small part of the Obscurus, floating down through the roof. Unnoticed by anyone else, it eventually floats up and away, trying to reconnect with its host.
What?
Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty pointed.
So it's like, what does that mean, trying to reconnect with its host? Because I thought, like, oh, that will then float away and become Credence again. But then it's like trying to reconnect with its host, but isn't like wouldn't Credence's body be in that rubble? So did he survive that? And I don't know.
Or didn't he when
he apparated or something? But no, don't listen to me.
When he comes, becomes the when he becomes the Obscurus, it doesn't just burst out of him. He becomes it, right?
Yeah.
So he was, when it was in full Obscurus mode, and they all shot the wands at him. God, all shot the spells at him. He's like in that mass. He is that mass.
Yeah.
So maybe that tiny little bit's enough to like become him again. I don't know.
Or maybe that tiny little bit did separate from him. I don't know. Because it says like a piece of the Obscurus.
Well, Ezra Miller is confirmed for the next film, I think. So
yeah.
He's found his way back somehow. But yeah, I can't. He must still have that in him.
Yeah,
I think he decides to use that against Grindelwald or still join him, as we can discuss in a moment about Grindelwald's relationship with Credence. But we shall wait and see.
It's a weird little thing.
Yeah. So that's probably a good moment to move on to the main discussion.
Yeah.
I'll just round up the outpost. Say thank you everyone who left us comments. We're sorry we couldn't read them all, but if we had, it would have taken us hours, and there's so much to discuss that we're definitely going to get to it in another episode. Make sure to visit the Speak Beastie page on MuggleNet for more discussions.
Cool. Main discussion, we're going to mostly talk about graves. Because we haven't talked about that guy enough in this whole podcast. Our favorite main discussion topic.
It won't last for very long, so we might as well soak it up.
What is Eleanor's general fulmination?
Sorry, I forgot. I haven't deleted that. Just because I was just like, well, that's the thing, because when I got out of the movie, I was just like, oh, really? What? And I think because we're coming up to the graves part, I should probably just say that at that part in the movie, I actually groaned out loud as soon as it happened. And my friend next to me afterwards was just like, you weren't a fan, were you? You didn't like that part. I was like, no, I hated it. Because it was such like a Scooby-Doo moment. Just like, oh, look! If it wasn't for you meddling kids, I was just like, oh.
Oh, my God.
I can't stand it.
I need that, like, GIF set or video, and I would have gotten away with it, too, if it weren't for you meddling kids. That's basically what he says. That's what the die line means.
Exactly, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You decode it.
So let's just real quick, what we know Eleanor's thoughts about it. What, Claire and Sophie, how did you feel in that moment?
So I think, as I said before, I had it ruined. Well, not ruined for me. I openly accepted said spoiler because I got pulled last minute into the media roundtables, and I was asking people for questions, and they were like, you need to ask these questions, but you need to know these spoilers to ask these questions. And I accepted those spoilers, and I did have a good half an hour of being like, oh my God. So actually, I think I quite enjoyed the reveal because I found out about it the night before I saw the movie. And therefore it was actually quite an exciting reveal in my head because I hadn't really worked out how it happened. In the actual movie.
And that would be cool to watch the movie the first time and know.
Well, the thing is, I was trying to put it out of my mind.
Yeah.
But I was spending a lot of time being like, oh, Colin Farrell's really good. And I don't usually like Colin Farrell movies. I can't say, like, he's never been bad, particularly. But I can't list a load of movies
really
I love about him.
Like, cared about Colin Farrell before. And now I'm like,
Colin Farrell.
I know. I saw someone post something on Twitter about Colin Farrell casting spells is my new jam. And just pretty much that. Just that, like, horrible whippy one that he's got when he's, like, thrashing.
What was with that?
Yeah.
That went on forever. I was like, what are you doing to him? He's not dying. Nothing's happening. He's not defending himself. Why isn't he, like, I don't understand the point of this. It looks really cool, but why?
It just looks really cool.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in terms of the reveal, it was more of a case of like, oh, I really don't want Graves to go. I have feelings on Johnny Depp being cast, and mainly like everything personal aside, mainly just because I'm kind of bored of him as an actor. I used to love his movies, but then he just kept doing the same thing over and over again. And he is a good actor and he's capable of doing good stuff, but I just feel like he's got lazy. And my general feeling on the casting is it's a predictable performance. And I know people might not disagree with me on this one, but for me, I felt Helena Bonham Carter was a predictable performance of Bellatrix. She wasn't bad. It was just not what I thought it could be, which is why I wish we'd seen Helena McCrory's Bellatrix. And I think that's what we might get with Johnny Depp's Grindelwald.
Yeah, I think,
and that's why I felt it was a bit more.
Also, because you know him, he's such a familiar actor. You just kind of, he's one of those people, you just see Johnny Depp. You don't see the character in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of, I just was pulled straight out of the
movie. Yeah, it takes you out.
It's like, oh, Johnny Depp. You know, ridiculous. Like, what is that character design?
Bring back Colin.
I was gutted to see that we weren't going to have any more Graves. I was just like, no.
He looked so cool as well. He looked so much better in the 1920s, like, outfit, haircut, everything. Like, someone pointed out to me, oh, well, Johnny Depp had the same haircut as Colin Farrell. And I was like, no, he didn't. She was like, yes, he did. And I was like, oh, God, he did. It's just that Colin Farrell rocked it and Johnny Depp looked like a hipster. Like, it was
amazing when I saw it with my sister. And, like, she turned to me three times when we were watching it. The first was like, it's starting. The second one was like, the third one at the very end was, oh, my God, that's Johnny Depp. And then the middle one was like, Colin Farrell's really fit. it's really quiet because British cinemas are generally quite quiet. She's like, he's so hot. I think that was during like a spell casting moment. With the Johnny Depp, you seeing it's Johnny Depp, that is clearly intentional because so there aren't many actors that are relatively famous of that age who is recognised around the world. And even though they say that Dumbledore and Grindelwald's stories become more prominent, I don't think it's going to become prominent for at least another two movies. And in 5 years' time, you still need people that are only going to see these movies once as they come in the cinema, or maybe once or twice, and then they won't spend 2 years talking on a podcast about them. They will just go away and then come back, and they need to know, oh, that's the Johnny Depp character. And you need that recognition from fans in the USA to Europe to Japan to Australia. Like, and there aren't many actors of that age who have that caliber who could then also play Grindelwald, because you've got like Brad Pitt or George Clooney, like they're of that age, and I can't really see them playing this.
There are, to be fair,
a couple of European actors who may be like on that, like can you imagine like a Mads Mikkelsen's Grindelwald? But yes. I still don't think they're famous enough to be like recalled immediately by a random fan who's only going to see these movies every 2 years.
I was talking about the Mikkelsen brothers though, and I was like, we were like, either one of them could have done it and they would have had the accent.
But
I reluctantly see that. They're very logical. I hate it though.
It's a bloody tricky one. But in terms of the timeline now, so I should say that I thought of this about 2 hours ago. I have a theory, and I was cold and on a train station, and I haven't checked if anyone else has come up with this or if there's anything that maybe goes against this. So guys, let me know. Mm-hmm. And anyone listening, let me know if I'm talking complete nonsense. So my vague theory of how it all came about is that, so we know from Pottermore that Graves is an established Auror. His family are part of like the founding wizarding father, witches and wizards of the USA, I think, something like that. You know, that collection of names. We read all this and I've now forgotten it all. An ancestor of his was part of that. So, and then the Graves have become an established family, you know, like the Malfoys and the Potters and stuff. They're known within the American wizarding world. So he's an established Auror. There's obviously been some activity in Europe for quite some time with Grindelwald kicking around, and we don't know whether he had any involvement in World War One, but he's obviously wreaking havoc. And I feel like, because that's the big scene where you've got the Magical Congress, is that what they're called? was When Everyone's There. What was that bit called?
Mm-hmm.
Whenever all the politicians.
International Confederation.
Thank you. When the International Confederation are there, it implies that there is a lot of like global conversation happening within the wizarding world. So I feel like there might have been a moment where they're like, right, we're going to send some of our best auras out there to go and see what's going on. And Graves might have even just out of curiosity been like, I want to go and find out. But Credence is, as we've established from the screenplay, is a man. He's an adult. So whether that makes him 18 or maybe 17, if it's near Wizarding World, but probably also 20, he's going to have been causing some kind of havoc for some time. It's clear that Shaw is the first person he's murdered, or I think that's at least implied. So it
first
might
be a significant person.
Yeah. And so I think it will be small scale and they hadn't quite realized, but he's getting stronger and stronger, which I'll come back into a second why I think he might be getting stronger. So there's already some activity happening, and maybe there are some rumors that it could be Grindelwald, but maybe not. Maybe it's just something that's coming up. And so Graves goes over to Eastern Europe, wherever they are at this point. Maybe there's a whole group of auras. Maybe Grindelwald's already like invaded this lot, but the Graves family are probably a famous family. They might recognize him as a person or just be aware of him. And there's possible, there's conversations that Graves has talking about this thing happening in New York, and Grindelwald somehow hears about it. Again, there's a lot of loops. There's a lot of gaps in my suggested timeline. Grindelwald hears this conversation, but he works out based on what, maybe he's, you know, become chummy with him because we've seen that Grindelwald can like endear people to him. But somehow he's found out, and that those rumors get to him, and he's like, okay, I need to get that Obscurus, because through the stuff with Ariana, he's worked out what these could be. Maybe he's done further research. Maybe he's also explored, and like, you know, Knight Newt has, maybe he's seen this elsewhere. And I think at that point, I think Graves was in Europe when whatever happened. I know it's sort of been confirmed. It might be Polyjuice, but whatever it is that happened then. And I think he's then been coming back and forth. And the only reason I think he's been coming back and forth is the script says it happens a few days before. Yeah. That scene we see at the very beginning happens a few days before. There is no way he has, and I do not use this word lightly, but I 100% think he groomed Credence. That is like the whole relationship is not a healthy one. And it is, it's such a dependency. So and that does not happen overnight. But also Graves has an established career. So I think there's been a lot of like jumping across continents, and maybe Graves keeps finding some excuse. Cause he says in that scene, like, this isn't Grindelwald. I saw this stuff in Europe. So he's got this witness, he's witnessing this. I believe that the visions and prophecies, I don't think Grindelwald's a seer. I think that's probably nonsense. And I think he's just heard from the sounds of what this thing is, probably an Obscurus. He wants to go and find out. So by assuming the role of Graves, he can find out, and that's when he works out about Credence. So in terms of if he didn't have a vision, how would he find out? I believe you can sense magic. Dumbledore could sense magic, so Grindelwald could definitely sense it, and he could probably sense it in the area of where the Second Salemers are staying. He doesn't know it's a young boy or a boy or a girl. And he says from his prophecies he can't see, but he knows they're young. Well, if every recorded incident is under the age of 10, then he could just say, oh, I know this Obscurus is under the age of 10, so it's a boy or a girl. And I think the more that he's been grooming Credence and he's been treating Credence the way he has and trying, kind of encouraging it, but then also as Credence is getting older, he's maybe fighting it. So as a result, it's got stronger. But maybe it's also so suppressed that even Grindelwald couldn't acknowledge it. I didn't notice it because it was just so, because if he's, you know, 24 and he's been living with this for like the majority of his life, if most of the people have not lived beyond the age of 10, that's at least maybe 8 years where he's been fighting this. So that is my vague timeline on how I think this can potentially work, because Graves needs to be established. And
for the last point there, like, if Ariana was an Obscurus, Grindelwald would know what an Obscurus is, and he would know, like, this black smoke thing is an Obscurus. And
I think that's very logical that he probably came across Obscurus. I think one of the theories I saw was that basically the fight was about, like, the Albus Dumbledore Grindelwald Ariana three-way fight was about Grindelwald wanting to take Ariana with them and use her Obscurus as a tool to take over, obviously. The fight was Aberforth coming in and saying, no, you can't do that, and Albus realizing, actually, yeah, you can't do that, and then all hell breaks loose kind of thing.
Yeah, now we know just how much hell would have broken loose.
Yeah, I just think, like, this whole, like, what you were talking about with, like, skipping across continents, like, how did he learn to be, like, such a good, like, how did he manage to learn how to imitate Graves so well? Like, I guess, I just,
But this is the gap where it has to have happened in Europe. It can't have happened in the US because he's been in Europe recently, and Grindelwald has been wreaking havoc in Europe recently. So it has to have happened somewhere around then. And maybe Graves was involved in the capture of him the first time around, and then he got out and escaped. I do think the Graves are an established family, and I think there's a reputation that they could assume. But then also, I think he's a smart guy. He's clearly good at, like we said, like charming people, that he could probably gauge from the way people reacted around him how to play like that character.
Mm. I like the idea that Graves like willingly let Grindelwald impersonate him. I think that sounds like a really cool idea.
Because maybe Graves already thought along those lines.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I guess would make it easier for him to become that kind of, like impersonate him if he already has a bit of that, those beliefs there.
And, you know, I've seen, because people have talked about, like, so the script says the next morning between the two scenes.
Which...
And that's, it's like, I can accept it all, except it's like, how did he get from Europe to America? But she didn't say that transatlantic apparition is impossible.
She just said it's very dangerous.
Yeah, and so people don't do it. So, I mean, she didn't rule it out. So I guess that could be, he could have apparated. Especially if he's been in both places, he knows exactly where to go. And, what to visualize and
from
stuff.
Different locations. Also, there is a bit, if you've got the screenplay handy, mine's across the other side of the room, conveniently. There's a bit that when Tina takes Newt up to the room, and there's a comment about, and maybe it's a bit before that, but it's basically the next time you see Graves after the seeing the Obscurus running through the street, it says something about him being bruised from the night before. So that, it didn't really imply what the night before was, whether he got involved with the Obscurus at that point.
I wonder about the first scene, what the point of it is, other than to show Grindelwald. Like, why are these Aurors at this place and they all get killed? I guess it doesn't necessarily say that they all get killed, but they're all...
I think they're just the magical community is trying to squash Grindelwald, and if they know he's there. But also just displays his power as well, that he can do that.
Yeah. Especially if he's using the Elder Wand there.
Don't get started on that.
That's a whole other question.
Okay, so I've got it right. So scene 22, interior major investigation department, close up on a newspaper, magical disturbances risk wizarding exposure. Uh-huh. Among them, so a group of highest level Aurors hanging around, among them are Graves, examining the newspaper, his face cut and bruised from last night's encounter with the strange entity, Amanda Pickery. So did he encounter it? I don't remember any encountering. He just kind of watched it and smirked.
Yeah. In the movie, it says last night. In the movie, it didn't seem like that was a different day.
Well, so yeah, and it doesn't even imply that in the screenplay either. It kind of just looks like it all flows in. Because also, maybe if it says next day, which is when Newt is on the boat, right? But it takes you a bit of time to get through.
Yeah.
To, sail across the Atlantic.
And then in the movie, I don't remember him having cuts or bruises.
No, I don't remember having that either.
So this would be like the first thing so far I've found that is different. That's interesting.
I think Igor found something that was different. He posted in one of the groups about, this is a complete tangent, but about the goblin in The Blind Pig. It says she has a wand.
Oh, yeah.
But she doesn't.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I never heard about that.
But yeah, sidetrack.
Yeah, he said, I was there. This is a beast. No human could do what this thing is capable of. I don't know. Maybe we know that she's bad at math. Maybe she's just bad at days.
Yeah.
But I, she's not. I know there are editors on these, like, on the books, yeah. But with the screenplay. Also, she's bad. She's bad at math, but she's good at tracking timelines generally.
Yeah. It's very odd.
Also, this one would be, what, her third screenplay or something? She drafted it, like, a couple of times. So
oh, yeah, yeah.
It should be about right. Like...
Well, yeah, that's she would have drafted it and edited it. Other people would have edited it, like...
And this has probably been edited, like, a million times, just the book.
Yeah, because just, you know, her original screenplay would have included all those scenes we know they filmed that they obviously took out of the published book because they knew it wasn't going to be in the movie.
No, I'm really annoyed they did that. I wanted them all in there. Yeah. It's an interesting...
Especially since they're just telling us what they all are.
Yeah, why didn't they leave them in? It's interesting they specify next morning as well, because, like, later on it just says, even when it is the next day, it just says day. So it seems like that was a choice, in a way.
When you write a script, like, you don't always have to put the next morning. You can just put... day or morning, so it would be a very specific choice to say the next morning. And I was like, maybe it could mean the next morning after, like, the last newspaper we saw, but that's not generally what it would mean.
I mean, yeah, that's
specifically scene one, scene two.
It would be interesting if Graves did volunteer, because then that would make some of the timeline work a bit better. Because then,
yeah, that would make a little bit more sense.
Because then some of it might actually be Graves. Because it could potentially imply that some of it isn't, some of the stuff we see isn't Grindelwald.
Yeah, maybe he doesn't arrive till later.
I thought it could be possible that, like, Graves was meeting with Credence before Grindelwald came in.
Yeah.
Either meeting with Credence, like, in a actually nice way or in a terrible way because he's working for Grindelwald.
And maybe also in terms of when he came across Credence, it could possibly have been related to Tina and her firing that they then find out.
I got a sense like Tina and Graves' relationship is like, that's a whole thing. Because she seems to really know him, except she doesn't clock the Polyjuice, obviously. But I don't know, that whole thing felt weird. And he seems to sort of trust her to an extent. I don't know, in those scenes you just get a sense that they've
in with Newt and he kind of gives this significant look as she leaves, and then he specifically comes down
A line in the screenplay about it in that very scene that I just read, and now I can't find the sorting page, but it's something about like Graves alone looks sympathetic. Where is it? Graves looks after them, the only one to appear sympathetic.
And it's not like at that point Grindelwald's like, ooh, this is connected to my thing in any way. Like, there's really, I don't see why he would take an interest.
Also,
I guess he would be interested in, I can make this person take the fall for me.
Possibly, easy to sort of, pass off on her.
I don't know. That's the thing. I just want to know how did she lose her job? I want to see that scene. Like, I want to know exactly what happened. And because she must have been really high up if she can just wander into the Madam President's office whenever she wants. It just seems so bizarre to me. I was just like,
it was the Auror office and the President's office.
And I don't think she's just wandering in. I think she was butting in, and I think
she wandered into the International Confederation. But butting in, same thing. No one even tries to stop her, and it's like, isn't she meant to be a disgraced Auror? Like, I don't understand. I mean, is it surely security or something? Like, I just don't understand.
Bah, security.
I don't know. I did a brief work experience in the Houses of Parliament when I was at school. And whilst like getting into the building was tight security, wandering around there wasn't as much. Like you could get into offices. I mean, obviously I couldn't just walk into the Prime Minister's office, but like she was an employee. I was just like a 17-year-old work experience kid. But I do think there's an element of just, I don't know, I think she just sort of butted her way in. I definitely don't think it was Pickery's office. It was definitely like the Aura's office. But maybe someone stuck up for her. Maybe Grave stuck up for her.
That's, I want to see that scene. Anyway, it's fine, whatever.
But yeah, going back, I could definitely see Graves and or Grindelwald first learning about the Obscurus, or first like pinpointing where it could be by the whole thing with Tina, because Tina attacked Mary Lou, and maybe something happened after that. Or he was just like, ah, children with repressed magic.
Maybe. Oh, there's so much backstory I want to know.
I know, there's so much.
There's so many different, like, things crammed in. You're like, to the story.
Well, there's like six different plot lines. Yeah. And you're like, look, J.K. Rowling, I understand. You write books. I understand. In books, it's great when you have seven or eight plot lines coming together at the end. It's fantastic. In a movie, I'm just like, what?
Happened. Yeah, well, that's the thing, is like, okay, technically, like, nothing doesn't make sense in the movie. Like, the movie does make sense as a whole. You just kind of have to be like, you just kind of have to accept things, which you have to do in movies sometimes. But if it was a book, then it would make so much more sense, because you could fill in all that information without throwing off the pacing. Because that's, they could have stopped and explained, oh, this is Polyjuice Potion and he has been Graves for this long. But like, if you did that in a movie, that would be stopping for too long. But if you did it in a book, you could do that more.
I think they could have done it. I mean, there are a lot of scenes that dragged on in the movie. They could have cut in half easily and put in different points of backstory. Like, I am not in any way a multi-million dollar movie director, but that's what I would have done.
But I think like, anyway. a lot of the long scenes, which feel like, I know one of my friends said, oh, I found the dinner scene like a bit lengthy and just a bit boring, which like, I can understand that point of view, because it's a bit tedious.
My friend had the weirdest criticism of that. She was like, how can she just make strudel and have no cooking happening? And I was like, of all the things that you have, I mean, you hate all of it, but why that? She's just like, I mean, well, Molly Weasley has to cook. Like, shouldn't Queenie have to cook as well? Like, there has to be some kind of process where the chemicals change. I was just, anyway.
It's magic. As long as she's got the original ingredients, I think you can do what you like.
I don't understand.
But like, a lot of those lengthy scenes are character setting, like they're character forming scenes. Like, you get a lot about the sisters and their dynamic from their little like cooking scene, and also you just get adorable Jacob faces.
The casual viewer is not at the end going like, oh, how could he? But the script said the next morning, is this Polyjuice Potion or what? Like, the casual viewer is like, okay. But if you would cut down too much character scenes, the casual viewer would be like, I didn't care about these characters.
Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't cut that scene. I'd cut all the beast scenes in half.
How dare
I'm a horrible person. No. I'm the worst.
I was like,
fantastic beasts.
I could have just had two.
I know. I said that on like a post thing and someone was like, how could you say that? That's the title of the movie. Like, oh well.
I could have just had 2 hours of Newt in his case with all his beasts. So
yeah.
I was 2 hours like, I
of Newt doing the rompent dance would have been my dream movie.
Yeah.
I hope all the beasts come in handy, though, like, down the track. I hope she uses them all, like, in a plot way down the track.
Yeah, that they aren't just dropped after this movie.
I need to see a plot in which the mooncalfs are pivotal.
Yes!
They were so painfully cute. Oh, God.
I need the Niffler to steal the Elder Wand.
Yes!
Or just the monkey. Let's bring the monkey back. He can steal the Elder Wand. That'd be great.
Monkey was good at that.
Yeah, I enjoyed the monkey. I did the seal. Forget the Fantastic Beasts, just these random cameos from real animals.
And the ostrich. Was it the ostrich?
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
That was great.
Well, can we talk about, I know we didn't have this in the doc, but I've kind of mentioned it a couple times, the whole, like, Elder Wand and allegiance because, like, Newt took down Grindelwald, but, like, Tina Accio'd his wand, but it was Graves' wand, not the Elder Wand. Obviously, that would have given the whole movie away.
Oh, that looks familiar.
Can you imagine if Graves had just walked in holding the Elder Wand?
That would have been amazing. Although, to be fair, he barely uses his wand. We've got that note. Like, he does so much, like, hand magic.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nifty.
It's very powerful.
Yeah. I think I do feel like this might be a bit of a... I do think they used Accio instead of Expelliarmus, so that it was quite clearly a summoning rather than disarming. But as I think has been raised in Malfoy Manor, Harry, like, wrestles, like, the Draco's wand off him. There's no magic involved. He just, like, takes it off him.
And well, I guess you could say that Harry overpowers Malfoy single-handedly. But in this case, it's Tina takes the wand, but Newt, using a beast, like, overpowers him. But it's kind of a team effort.
Hmm. Yeah, or if we go with the theory that Graves let Grindelwald use his appearance, maybe he's just borrowing Graves' wand, and therefore it's not lost its allegiance, therefore you can't steal the allegiance.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. That makes sense to me.
Yeah,
that's see, this was find also, it in the script.
This is what also doesn't... Okay, this is what, say he leaves the Elder Wand behind, and, like, he gets disarmed... and someone else technically is the owner of the Elder Wand, but then that person gets disarmed, and then that person gets disarmed. That means, like, the Elder Wand doesn't... Like, the Elder Wand knows who its master is, but, like, why hasn't that happened before? Because, like, then it would be virtually useless because no one... The person who eventually ends up with technically the power wouldn't know they were the owner of the Elder Wand. Do you see where I'm going with this?
Okay.
Like,
I gotta read this part in the script.
I was just thinking about it then with, like, if he left the Elder Wand behind and then he was overpowered and then that person was overpowered and then that person was overpowered, how would you figure out who the actual owner is and how would the owner ever get the Elder Wand back? And then wouldn't that just basically render the Elder Wand like just a normal wand?
Potentially. Yeah. But then maybe the implication, maybe that's why he just wasn't using a wand so much, so that he couldn't be disarmed.
So in the script, Newt throws the Swooping Evil or whatever. Graves tries to hold it off as it tightens, but staggers, struggles, and falls to his knees, dropping his wand.
Oh.
And then Tina says Accio. So I don't know if that's visible in the movie.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so
but
if
that's
he's not,
says he drops
if he's not
wand.
Holding it.
Ah, oh, Joe knew we'd pick at this.
She's so
grounded. Joe! so is that null and void? Does that mean... I think that's fine then, surely. I think that must mean that he's not...
Yeah, if he dropped
But he still is overpowered. Like,
yeah.
That seems like semantics. Like,
he punched someone and then took their wand.
You can overpower them. But you have to take the wand and you have to take a... You'd have to take a wand that is... that has their allegiance, and you have to take it from them forcibly. I think that's the rule. Just hysterical loosely. Laughter. Okay.
No, I just love it because I don't think we're going to get a definitive answer on this because if there is any answer that she gives, we're probably going to laugh similarly. And at the same time, if no one is there,
the other option is. They took the wand, and one of them is now the owner of the Elder Wand.
It screws up the entire Harry Potter series.
Unless Grindelwald takes it back, we've got 19 years to do it.
When does Newt Scamander die? He's not supposed to be killed before 1945, is he?
No.
That would be.
No. He's still alive well into, 1980s?
Oh, yeah, he's got to have grand.
I don't even think he's dead in Fantastic Beasts.
He's
when
not.
It was published.
He's
not in Fantastic
that's
Beasts.
Like,
what?
I mean, it was published in 2001.
Like, yeah. So.
Yeah.
He's probably still alive right now, guys.
Yeah.
Yay.
With his measles and Tina. Yeah. Oh. What are they called? Mauler and. Oh, I love them.
So our last point in here is, will we die just a little? And what does that mean?
I just feel like Johnny Depp just like made that up because it sounded like the type of thing that he would just do and say. And I don't want to like belittle J.K. Rowling scripts.
And they added it into the screenplay.
Yeah.
I actually thought he was speaking a different language when he said that.
Yeah, me too.
But the will we die part, the just a little I understood, but the will we die, he was like, will we die? And I was like, is that Albanian or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I genuinely didn't know what it was until I looked in the script to see what it said.
I happened to know before seeing the movie that Grindelwald said, will we die just a little? I didn't know anything else, but I knew that, so... Kind of is that so I knew that's what he was saying.
I feel like maybe this is a quote. Will we die? I mean, it's coming up on Google. It's probably because it's Grindelwald says.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's like paraphrasing something from something else. I don't know.
Okay, are any of you guys like really into the Bible? Because is there some kind of Bible connotation? No, but like, I mean, I'm vaguely know the stories, but like, that's like a big thing with J.K. Rowling. Like the last, what is it, enemy to be destroyed is death and all that. So they're all from, they're Bible quotes, right? Like,
yeah.
Some kind of biblical
It allusion. Is very Bible-like.
Okay, I found a title. Today We Die a Little. The Rise and Fall of Emil Zatopek, Olympic Legend.
That sounds like it.
You were like, The Rise and Fall, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then it was like, Olympic athlete. Maybe not.
I can't think of any Bible links. Nothing comes up, but someone who knows more will probably...
Anyone Let's see out what there this knows, Reddit please comment. Well, otherwise, I guess there's just, like, Deathly Hallows connotations and stuff. But I don't know, can you die a little bit?
Like, it's just such an odd phrase.
I guess Horcruxes?
But he wasn't into the Horcruxes.
No.
But that's the other thing, is Dumbledore was like, Voldemort is going beyond usual evil. And obviously Grindelwald was meant to be evil. Maybe he had one or something. I don't know. But that seems too easy to just have Grindelwald having a Horcrux.
Maybe that's why he's got dodgy hair and eyebrows. It's the first thing that went.
Well, I'm like, I found a Reddit thread about it, so I'm just kind of looking at what people say.
A lot of people brought up Petit Mort.
What?
Like the French, like in French, little death. Like petit mort is orgasm in French.
That would be amazing if that was the implication.
A lot of people bringing that up, so I just thought I should probably mention it.
There's a suggestion that Grindelwald is referring to Credence not dying, and that he saw it and Newt also saw it. I don't know about that, but you know, it's. Something interesting.
Actually, also in terms of
it says the thing about the French. So
Grindelwald might know that Credence is alive because I saw this somewhere. I don't know where I saw this, unless it's in post from somewhere I'll post. But in terms of the Deathly Hallows symbol and that necklace, where did that go? So he might know if Credence is alive and still has it.
Oh yeah.
Well, yeah, because isn't it, he's supposed to, he can touch the necklace and, like, call him.
I love how much that's like Hermione's galleons. Like, the little metal protein charm. I like it. Consistency.
Yeah.
Why didn't you give that to him sooner, Gellert? Anyway.
But maybe if he's only been Grindelwald for a little bit.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have had it, maybe.
Oh, that's interesting. So that's definitely the point from which he was Grindelwald before, that he could still have been great.
Yeah.
You can see the... and that's you can see it in his pocket during the interrogation scene.
And I think he's definitely Grindelwald in that interrogation scene, because the way that he passes that sentence immediately, I don't think Serafina Pickery is aware of that sentence being passed, and that he was probably going to leg it Oh, definitely. Thing. So, like,
I was like, that's definitely not ruled. How the you know judging people works. It's not a good judicial system. What? The head or just goes kill him.
Also, right, I got a feeling those women were like under the Imperius curse. They just seem so like serene in a really odd way. And also, the woman that took,
it's like Bernadette.
Yeah, Bernadette, who takes Tina's thing. She looked like the actress. No offense to the actress, but she looked like she'd never seen a wand before. She literally, the way she just like drew it across and then just like threw it across the water. I was like, seriously, like if you do this every day, you'd do this a bit more casually. But side point.
But maybe we can take something from that. Maybe this is very unique. It doesn't happen very often. No, don't listen to me.
They this is really random, but also during that scene, the second time I saw it, knowing that it was really Grindelwald, when he's like asking Newt about Dumbledore and stuff, I just thought it was just interesting to watch it, knowing the actual identity of him. Which is a bit weird.
Also, yeah, just in Colin Farrell's moderate obsession, the way he shushes Tina and then he just like keeps his finger on his lips for ages is great. It's a good performance there. It's a little really moment. But in terms of the Dumbledore stuff, and then also when he talks about that, so it's useless. Eddie Redmayne, phenomenal acting in that moment. But his whole like useless, what would you use it for bit? But it would suggest that Grindelwald still isn't quite sure how you would use an Obscurus. Because he thinks maybe Newt has worked out how to do it.
Yeah. Which I think is why he's so keen to question him, isn't it? Because he just wants to know.
I also don't like the idea, well, as much as I'd like to see Colin Farrell wandering around that space, I don't like the idea, things are wreaking havoc on my desk. I don't like the idea of Grindelwald just like wandering around Newt's case with all the animals.
I don't think Grindelwald doesn't really have any hatred towards animals, though.
It's just like it's just Newt's like space. It's like Voldemort just mooching around Harry's bedroom. It's a bit weird.
But it's not like, but I don't think Grindelwald's not quite like as needlessly evil. He's like, I want to exterminate muggles. So it's like he's evil in one particular direction, whereas Voldemort would have just been like, let's kill everything for fun. You know, I think there's a slight difference.
Also, it's not so much about killing muggles, is it? Grindelwald wants to suppress muggles.
Oh, taking over muggles.
Yeah,
sorry.
And that's why he wants to invoke this war, yeah.
Yes, they kind of have different intentions, I guess.
Also, this is my theory about the death pool thing. I thought that that was like the state taking all of the memories from the accused. Is that
plausible?
I was just looking at that because I was wondering what that whole thing was called. It's called a death cell and a death potion, but it says extracts her happy memories.
The thing is, I understood the point of like putting happy memories in there so that it would like lull you into this weird state where you're just
happy to die. But
then it just like consumes them, and that's a bit weird.
But that's really boring. Like, I mean, why wouldn't you just Avada Kedavra them? Like, if you're actually trying to
because you have to feel Avada Kedavra.
Yeah, you guys mentioned this on the last week's episode. I think you definitely have to really want to kill them.
1920s. They don't really like. Oh, you think like it's because people really wanted to like kill you, can't find someone who would do that. I'm sure you could. Like, I don't think that's the issue. I just think it's an incredibly elaborate, like, I mean, and also could you imagine trying to brew that potion? It's enormous. I mean, it would take years to do. It just is really ridiculous. I mean, all the ingredients that would have to go into it.
I don't think it's a potion. It definitely looks like a pensieve. It's definitely thoughts. But I don't know if it's all the thoughts of everyone ever executed. I think it might just be all the happy thoughts. But I don't quite know where they get consumed. That's the bit I didn't quite understand. Is like, where do they go when like the pensieve is like rising above her and it's burning the seat? Do they just get swallowed? Because that's a bit horrible.
Yeah, it just says like the liquid has now turned to a black bubbling death potion. It rises up surrounding Tina on her chair, almost engulfing her.
So I guess it just like...
So it's not really explained at all.
I think it's just a bit sinister.
Although, There was one theory that it was like the draft of the living death, because the feather or the leaf or whatever like burnt the same way as the wand did. I think in the sixth, I think, maybe. But yeah, I like the memory idea, because otherwise it's just boring. But anyway, that's just me.
It does look like thoughts and memories. And it would suggest why maybe the other ones come forward out of Tina's mind when she's staring into the pool.
Yeah. Oh, I really want that scene. Just like, all we got was a glimpse.
I don't, what scene? Just the whole, every scene?
That we didn't just see? All of it. All of it, all the time.
Every in-between scene. You just want to be constantly watching Fantastic Beasts.
He's just like mute, like shading. It's just like, I want to know, how do you do it?
I'm for it.
No, if they're going to show us any scenes, I want to know the sodding, how Graves, Grindelwald became Graves. That's what we need to see. Or definitely. I really hope that gets explained in some way, and I'm really worried it won't.
That's got to be explained at the beginning of the next movie.
Please. I hope so. And I hope it's in the form of Colin Farrell coming back. I mean, like, I'm going to take him down. Yes. And it's going to be wonderful. And he'll still wear that lovely coat. Oh, gosh.
Michael last time was just kept saying that Graves was dead. Though. And I was like, Graves is not dead. Thank you. I don't care if they've said he's not coming back. Graves is alive and Colin Farrell will play him again.
But with the coat, because the next movie's going to be set in summer, so they're wearing coats.
Someone posted that in something earlier.
I did.
It was you. And I was like, oh my god! One of my friends who knows me a bit too well, she was like, so you liked the coats then, hey?
Yes, I don't know what I'm gonna do if Luke wears different clothes. Like, who is he?
Yeah, I mean, well, you guys have got two more years to plan the extra cosplay once we've seen the new photos. So.
Yeah.
I love what he wears. I love the coat.
No.
I love all the coats. I was a bit disappointed you couldn't see how sparkly Graves' coat actually is.
Yeah. Didn't come across at all.
Yeah. I know. It's disappointing. I did like his like flary sleeves though. There's a point where he like waved his wand and it just sort of flapped a bit. And the waistcoat was very good. It was just all very good. Also, I feel like we should maybe round off this thing by just describing the character description of when we first meet Percival Graves. And I just think
oh my
they
God,
nailed
I love
it.
This
yeah.
description.
Graves. Smart clothing, very handsome, early middle age. His demeanour differs from those around him. He is watchful, tightly cold. An air of intense confidence. Nailed it, basically.
Like, I like that most of the characters don't get, like, most of the characters don't get, like, a pause in the script to be like, this is who they are.
It's gonna be really hot,
like,
guys.
We see Newt Scamander, and we see this person, and we see Tina, and she has mustard on her mouth. But, like, Graves, it's like, okay, we gotta tell you about this guy.
Yeah, he's gonna have a great outfit. He's gonna have that cracking coat, and he's gonna look really good.
I just like how specific it is. You know, very handsome. Like, yeah. Okay.
And again, that like it's in great. Terms of casting, that they were like, he's gonna be a good enough actor. He's gonna be a certain age, like early middle age, good looking, well, like recognizable name. That must have been a bit of a tricky one to cast, because like people at Colin Farrell's level might not have wanted to do this. I'm curious to know how they came about coming across getting to Colin Farrell.
They would. Everyone would want to be in a Harry Potter movie. Besides, they're actors; it's work. Like you know,
but like people of his sort of age and regular work. Like, I think they probably wouldn't. Have
There's some people who will be like, "Oh no, I only do whatever. This is frivolous."
But there might be some actors. I feel like some actors would have turned down a role playing someone else.
That's true.
Especially that they're going to like turn into a slightly more famous person. I think there might be some people who have an ego behind that.
Shall we wrap up the discussion of Graves?
Sure.
Though we never will.
No. I'll take it over to my next great love of the Fantastic Beasts series films. Uh-huh. In the new case, in which we take a look at one of the beasts, and we're going to feature one of the beasts that featured in this movie. And that is the glorious Arumpant. Gonna read the excerpt. out of Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. The Arumpant is a large grey African beast of great power, weighing up to a ton, pretty big. The Arumpant may be mistaken for a rhinoceros at a distance, quite a distance because it's bloody huge. It has a thick hide that repels most charms and curses, a large sharp horn upon its nose, and a long rope-like tail. Arumpants give birth to only one calf at a time. The Arumpant will not attack unless sorely provoked, but should it charge, the results are usually catastrophic. The Arumpant's horn can pierce everything from skin to metal, which is insane, and contains a deadly fluid which will cause whatever is infected with it to explode, as seen in...
That's my issue. It did not explode. It did not explode. I was sorely disappointed. Anyway, go on.
Arumpant numbers are not great, as males frequently explode... as males frequently explode each other during mating season, they are treated with great caution by African wizards. Arumpant horns, tails, and the exploding fluid are all used in potions, though classified as Class B tradable materials. Dangerous and subject to strict control. And it is 4 X's on the MOM classification scale. We have, of course, seen a sort of an Arumpant before in the not-so-nice shape of it's just its horn mounted on the Lovegood's wall. And obviously it was mistaken for a Crumplehorn Snorkack horn. Have I got that right? But as was made quite clear not long after that chapter, that it wasn't, and it was an Arumpant horn. Which leads us to its glorious moment in this film. And before we discuss whether we like that scene or not, I would just like to say this ginormous market research that I undertook at lunchtime today. To be fair, I have to say I was quite pleased by how many votes we got. 655 from my account.
Wow!
Yeah, decent size.
People feel passionately about this.
Yeah, and I also say that loved, so the categories were the question was, did you enjoy the Arumpant mating dance? And it was loved it, a highlight, take it or leave it, or no, a little bit cringe. Loved it / a highlight, one with a greater mandate that certain politicians in this current climate did. 65% of people bloody loved it.
I love the way you framed that.
And then 18% were a bit indifferent, and then 17 thought it was a bit cringe. But generally, like, the people that responding as well on the tweet said some people like found it hilarious and just laughed a lot. Other people just found it really endearing, and just found it quite charming, and you just learn a lot about news. I really enjoyed it. I thought the first time I was like, oh, it's a bit weird. But then I think every time I've seen it, I've enjoyed it more. Mainly just because when it rolls over and there's a shot from the top and it's just going, just his face and the noise just gets me every time. And it's just her determination. I mean, she is so ready to mate, and it's great. I love it.
Well, it's so one good. Of those scenes in a movie that usually I'd find like really embarrassing, like secondhand embarrassment, and I'd be like, this is so awkward, stop. But it's like, he's not embarrassed at all.
It's
and that's why it's so much fun, because he's just like, okay, I gotta do this. And he doesn't care if Jacob sees him doing this really weird dance. He probably wouldn't care if anyone saw him doing it. And it's great.
Intercut with Jacob's facial expressions, which were just generally brilliant for this entire movie. But just every now and then.
Also, now knowing that Eddie Redmayne, like, came up with the dance and, like, was sending videos to David Yates to be like, is this good?
It also just, it shows the coat, back onto the coat discussion.
Yes.
Beautiful display. Just the way he flicks it and then just, like, swoops around a bit. He's very agile, Eddie Redmayne. It's, I think you're right, Shannon. I think I would have found it cringe in any other situation, but he commits to it wholeheartedly. The beast is so, like, not realistic, but believable. That, and just with adorable little noises, that it just, it for me, it certainly worked. I feel like someone else it might not have done.
Still reckon it could have been cut in half, but I did enjoy it. I would like to say I did. I appreciated the effort.
We know how you feel.
I'm trying to be mildly diplomatic.
I think the really thing that was really nice about giving this sort of the character this sort of very luxurious time, like you said, it is a very long scene, but an enjoyable scene, is that we were so expecting like the Obscurus to be a beast and that there would be beasts wreaking havoc. And all we see from this movie is that, like Newt says, the beasts aren't, unless provoked, they aren't particularly harmless. Sorry, they're particularly harmful. Like, the Rumpant could cause some severe damage, she'd be in the situation to need to, but it wasn't with attack. She wasn't trying to attack. She's just trying to mate, but not targeting creatures of the same size. And the same with, like, you know, the Niffler's not being malicious. He's just, like, likes cold stuff. And all the others, it's all about, you know, them just protecting themselves. Yeah. It's not about being like, yeah, malicious, horrible creatures, which I liked. I like that you had one wreaking havoc, causing destruction, but without it being a horrible incident. And also like the fact that it broke into a zoo, and so therefore there was just lots of normal creatures running around, which is great.
The monkey stealing the wand. That was great.
Yeah, and is it a hippo or a rhino? I think it's a rhino that it corners.
Yeah, a rhino.
The rhino, the poor rhino.
Yeah, I think it was a hippo.
I feel
strongly because a hippopotamus is one of my spirit animals.
Wow.
Point out. As in vicious and quite overweight. My friend said it taking up, what was it? She said oh yeah, it's because, you know, you have a presence. So I was like, okay. Anyway, hippopotamuses I love.
Well, apparently Arumpans can be a corporeal patronus, and now I feel very inferior with my cat. And I want an Arumpant.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I have a squirrel.
Oh, a squirrel, yeah.
I wore my gray squirrel earrings to the movie because my sister gave me gray squirrel earrings.
Oh, that's good. Good move. I did not dress up.
I got a Pine Martin. It's cute. That's J.K. Rowling's first one. And I was like, yes!
Love Pine Martins.
Yeah, I've got a deer hound. It's quite cute.
Yeah, that's cute.
A big dog. It's nice.
Mum was an otter cat, so it was slightly specific. It looks like a wild cat, but it's actually domestic, which I quite like that. But an Arumpant, guys. Some people can get an Arumpant.
I don't know if I want to meet that person.
Kind of in awe, wouldn't you? Like, if that came at you, be like,
okay. I hope whoever has an Arumpant out there has a significant other who has now done this mating dance. Yes. And they were really embarrassed. And I'm taking the quiz again.
I really hope so. Just exceptional. But yeah, I think we probably won't see the Arumpant again. I feel like it's had its moment.
Mm-hmm.
But what a moment.
No. They have to come back. Otherwise, I don't, no. Because otherwise, that was too disjointed. No, the beasts have to come back in a plot way. That has to happen. Damn it.
I think it will come back. I think we'll see it again.
Kills Grindelwald.
It wasn't Dumbledore all along. It would be good if the Rumpant was used to actually explode something at some point.
So that's it for today's episode. Our podcast question this week is, what do you think "will we die just a little" means? So comment, if you're in the common room, talk to us, send us your fantastic theories, questions, literally anything, and we might read it on the show. So drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And thank you, Eleanor, Claire, and Sophie, for joining me today.
Cheers.
Thank you.
It's exciting. These time zones are crazy. I think this is the most time zones we've had. almost the most possible time zones for us to have.
Yeah, and across three continents. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. That's pretty good. We just want to take a moment to thank everyone who has supported us on Patreon. We could not do this show without you all, and we are just so appreciative of the support. Our Speak Beastie Common Room is going crazy with theories and discussions, so be sure to check out www.patreon.com/speakbeastie to find out how you can join in. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, on Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, and on Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Sophie.
I'm Claire.
And I'm Eleanor.
Case closed.